Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, 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 this is Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's October 21st, 2014. This is the Cider Week preview, so this is the Cider Sessions show. We're going to be tasting some special Kingston Black varietal ciders that were sourced by our good friend Gay Howard of United States of Cider, also known as @HelloCider on Twitter. So, Gay, welcome to the show. You've really helped put together this show. We're trying to preview Cider Week. And why did you have us focus on Kingston Black varietals?
Well, I think there's so much interesting cider being made in the United States right now, it can become daunting if you're trying to explore cider and really start understanding what's going on. So picking one apple and seeing what different American cider makers are doing with that apple seemed like a good way to start.
No, it's great, and we're going to tell the story of it today. Steve Wood from Farnham Hill is going to call in. So what is it about Steve? Was Steve the only person growing Kingston Black apples for a while?
I believe he was one of the first people to start exploring that apple many years ago in the Northeast.
All right, and he's going to be calling in a minute. We've also got, I know you're here, Sasha and Sabine from Cider Week New York, Dan Willison from Slyboro, who also brought in Kingston Black. Claire Paparazzo will join us a little later. She was the sommelier at Blue Hill. And, Kay Michaels, who's the cheesemonger at Eataly. So we've got a bunch of different ciders here. So, Kay, tell us which of the brands we have with the Kingston Black.
We have quite a selection here. We have the Farnham Hill Kingston Black Reserve Cider, which is one of Steve Wood's ciders. We have a very rare edition from West County Cider, a Kingston Black that was bottled in 2009, which normally people aren't holding their ciders that long, so that'll be exciting to taste. We also have Kingston Black Still Dry Cider from Eve Cidery. We have Redbird from upstate New York's Kingston Black, which I think they just started bottling in the last couple years. We have two Kingston Blacks from Distillery Lane Cider in Maryland. One of them is a bourbon barrel aged, so neither of those I've tried, but they're very going to be interesting, I think. We have Eden Sparkling Cider, which is a 50% Kingston Black, so it'll be interesting to see what the Kingston Black does in a blend.
Great. And Dan, you brought in one also.
Yeah, one chilling right now.
Chilling now, and that's you just bottled that this last week, yes?
Yeah.
So in this show, we're going to taste all of those.
Hopefully.
And we're going to talk through them. And Steve Wood has most of the samples, and also Rowan Jacobson, the author, will be calling in as well. So we're going to try to do a full tasting of the Kingston Black on air today. So now, Steve Wood, I know you're out there. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thanks, man. How are you?
Steve, tell us the story of the Kingston Black.
What's that?
Tell us the story of the Kingston Black.
Oh, it's a old, but not as old as people think it is. Cider from, I think it's near Martock in Somerset, but it's, maybe late 19th century, I believe, and it's been reputed for a long time in the UK for having for making a good single variety cider, for having the balance of acids and tannins and sugars to make a cider all on its own, which, despite what some people have tried to do with other varieties, most good cider varieties can't do. Most of them have been saved for generations for the attributes they bring to a blend. Kingston Black, it does what it does all on its own, but what it does is extremely variable, depending on where it's grown and how it's treated. And the tree's a nightmare. The apple's a pain in the neck. Everything's, it's got everything you'd like to have in a cider that you want to make a fuss about as being special, because it's a total pain in the neck. But yeah, good, beautiful apple. We grow some.
So what's the process of finding an apple that makes good cider? And, you know, how do you start as an orchardist? Tell us a little bit about that part of this.
Well, I mean, anybody who's got, I think, any sense is relying on his predecessor's experience. I took a long time for us to even get the rudiments of this, but depending on what you see, it depends on what you look for in cider. And it's the same as wine. I mean, you think about the range of flavors and aromas available from different grapes and grown in different parts of the world in wine. I mean, you don't expect Gewürztraminer to taste like Syrah. If you think as we do that good cider needs some kind of balance of bright acidity, some measure of fruitiness, and some kind of tannic structure, you need apples with some tannins in them. You need some bittersweets or bitter sharps for the tannic structure. You need some bright acid, some source of bright acid, and acid comes in all kinds of different packages. I mean, one acid apple doesn't ferment the same as another. And you need some apples that produce fruitiness in the thing that people also quite often forget is that this is as fermented, just like wine grapes. People don't expect the wine from grapes to taste like the grapes when they were picked. The apples that we fermented as cider, they don't taste anything like, the cider doesn't taste anything like the apples tasted when they were fresh. The attributes they bring to cider have to do with what happens with the kiss of the yeast. So you got to start somewhere, but we prefer to start with the experience of generations and try to figure out which of the apples that others have grown elsewhere in the world or around here for cider that we figure out which ones we thought we could grow well here. Anyway, that's what we kind of look for.
So, Steve, you say this is a bit of a difficult apple to grow, and I've read on your website you don't even produce this cider every year. Is that just because you can't get a good crop annually?
Well, we pretty much produce some of it every year. We have a few hundred trees at Kingston Black, and the crops vary a lot. This is a relatively light crop year. We've got one older block that's got almost nothing on it. But we've got, we always manage to pick some. But it's also, I mean, the actual quality of the fruit varies quite a lot from year to year if you're paying attention to that sort of thing. And so one portion of last year's crop of Kingston Black, we fermented it at different times. There was one of the fermentations we thought was really very good indeed, but it wasn't. You know, we're looking for a set of sort of what to us are fundamental Kingston Black characteristics. And part of what we fermented this year was lovely, but it didn't quite have the showcase Kingston Black stuff going on. And we wound up using it it's in New York right now on draft. And we made a special blend for of Dooryard for Cider Week in New York, out of that stuff, and we're very happy with that indeed. But the tree is recalcitrant. I don't know how far you want to get into horticulture, but
go deep.
The tree just doesn't. The tree messes with you all the time. It's very hard to get the thing to do what you want it to do, compared to some other varieties. But it's fine. You know, it's cool.
Well, it's a great cider. So.
We treat it as an outlier, though. We don't like to blend with it most of the time because it isn't like most of the other varieties. So we think it stands better on its own. It was unusual this year to have, a Kingston Black that we actually were happy to blend. Most of the time we make what we make and we bottle it on its own, and that's what it is, you know.
Steve, Dan Wilson's here from Slybro, too.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, what's happening, Dan?
Hey. I'm curious. I'm drinking your Kingston Black here, and it's got this great kind of soft woody tannic quality. There's a fair amount of barnyard. There's a really kind of nice inherent sweetness to it too. And I know this is fermented to dryness, but it's a really nice full mouthfeel. And it seems to me in working with Kingston Black that, as you say, there's a lot of variability from year to year. You have to kind of develop some experience with some of these varieties to know how to kind of elicit the right or to get to the right end point. And I'm not sure, maybe you could speak a little bit about that in terms of how you kind of manage the fermentation or what you notice up front in a juice that will kind of lead you in a certain direction on how to handle it.
Well, it's funny, Dan. I mean, Kingston Black does. We do an extreme version of our usual with Kingston Black. Our usual is hands off, and we do extreme hands off with Kingston Black. There are real differences in richness and in the brightness of acidity and the acidity from year to year in the actual fruit. There are other more subtle differences. They don't change the way we handle it. Hmm. We harvest it. You've seen and used a bit of our fruit. Harvested it at the extreme end of ripeness. We make sure that it's very ripe when we're pressing it. Mm-hmm. And then we always use the same neutral yeast. Most of the time we've fermented in old barrels or puncheons, really old barrels or puncheons. We're not looking for any oak effect or anything, but more just for the general slow oxygenation you get from a barrel. But sometimes we'll ferment some of it in stainless. But it's always the same treatment. I mean, we try to do slow, cool fermentations, the same yeast, let it go all the way to dryness. We wait a fair while before we rack it to let the finished cider drop bright, so that we're racking it off some fairly compacted lees. And we usually let it mature for 6 or 8 months before we put it, start evaluating it for bottling. Mm-hmm. And then we just stick it in bottles. It's very rarely filtered. It's usually bottled by gravity. Our effort in this one in particular, since we're making a single variety cider, was originally to discover what we think the real characteristics of it are.
Yeah.
And then just let that happen. Mm-hmm. And we get variability from year to year, but our Kingston Black ciders are fairly identifiable as all from the same place.
Right.
I think it's because we're using the same fruit with different variations from year to year. We haven't really changed since maybe 1997 what we do with the apples and with the juice. There are a lot of other things. We are amazed at the variation in Kingston Blacks. And we tasted a whole lot of folks' Kingston Blacks today in aid of being able to think about this program. But it's the same thing. I mean, we're amazed at how much variety there is in the actual ciders. Ours is just stripped down. It's what I mean. We think this is the apple. It's what the apple does when you.
Steve, it does taste like that. I mean, who wants to comment on what do you taste when you're tasting the Kingston Black Reserve from Farnham Hill?
What do I taste?
Yeah.
What do we taste? Oh well, what we smell is usually some. Combination. There's a funny sort of forest floor verging on distant barnyard. We usually smell cantaloupe and pears and some sort of broad unidentified. We haven't really got a name for the acid. We always smell what used to disturb us, which is a little bit of faint kind of toffee, which we thought originally was when we first were doing this, that there was some defect. We had some diacetyl or something going on, but we a long time ago realized that this is just a characteristic of the variety. There's always a little bit of cooked sugar toffee thing. There is one. One of our more controversial, or I'm not sure how to call it, descriptors almost always comes up, which is PWLEO, people who like each other. Which is our tasting shorthand for a particular sort of sweat that people who like each other very much on the moment.
Yeah, that's something I call musky. Is that real?
Yeah, musky is another one of the euphemisms mm-hmm. for that. Sure, yeah.
Yeah, I always get that.
So, yeah, I mean, so there's some sex in it. Mm-hmm. And we usually get, in the taste, we get acid over a broad sort of woody bitter. I don't know how specific you want me to get with this. We get lemon and hay and cantaloupe and... you know, I mean, we get other stuff that we don't particularly like from time to time, but if things have gone well, we that's what we get. We get a fairly full feel with moderate astringency and a finish that follows the taste with acid a little bit ahead of the fruits and the bitter, and that's, you know, variations on that theme. But I don't know if that's... I don't know if that was too much or too little. You really don't want to ask me to elaborate.
I have a feeling you could say a lot more, Steve, but that was... That was getting us in the right direction, because we kind of really want to talk about this, you know, apple varietal and your experience. So we're going to take a short break soon, but before we do that, tell us, I mean, is it true that you're the guy that spread this apple? I mean, you're the Johnny Appleseed of Kingston Black?
No.
Well, are others, everyone else is making, in our tasting today, of all the other sites.
Fine. Look, if you're talking to the market, yes, absolutely, we did do that. Yes, and we are geniuses in every other way too. But no, it's not true. I mean, this stuff has been planted all over this country before we started. We're the first ones, I think, to grow it in anything like commercial quantities in the country. And we've handed out a lot of budwood, but it was here. It was all over the place.
But I think you have a role, so you give cuttings to people so they can help.
Yeah.
You do that?
We give. I mean, Dan can tell you, we'll give budwood away to anybody. We give a lot of budwood away, thousands and thousands of buds away. But
because I'm interested in, like, you know, if I wanted to grow Kingston Black. So Dan, how did you get your Kingston Black? You got them as cuttings?
Two summers ago, with cuttings in the way that we're grafting the trees, they always come in the late part of the summer when the trees kind of stop their growth for that year. And we collect some new shoots and strip them of their leaves, refrigerate them, send them to a nursery, and they'll kind of snip individual buds from those shoots and graft them onto whichever rootstock that we choose, depending on how we plan to design and manage an orchard, whether they're dwarf rootstock or, you know, a larger tree. And they put them together and grow them up in a nursery for a couple of years. And so the trees, or the budwood that I got from Steve 2 Augusts ago, those trees went in the ground this year, and we put in a few hundred Kingston Black.
Nice. All right. Steve, I'll tell you what, you're going to take a short break. We're going to take a little break and be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile beer cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today.
Hey
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Again, check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. You can become a member. There's a lot of special benefits. And, of course, give a big shout-out to our sponsor, greatbrewers.com. You want to know more about beer and cider, and they have a lot of things going on for Cider Week in New York City as well, greatbrewers.com. All right, so we got a great show tonight. We're talking about Kingston Black. We're very focused on a certain varietal of apples. We got Steve Wood on the line. Roam Jacobson is going to call in, an author, great in-studio guest. So, Kay Michaels, you're a cheesemonger at Italy, but you're a big cider fan.
Yeah.
What was your question for Steve, and what's the next cider that we're drinking?
Yeah, so we're about to taste the Kingston Black from West County Cider, which is exciting for a couple of reasons. This one is a 2009 vintage that kind of got forgotten about in the basement. It's going to be exciting to taste for a couple of reasons. One, not a lot of people are doing cellaring of cider.
You mean in your basement?
No, not mine. At West County, the Maloneys were very generous in sharing this with us for today, because this is a very special tasting. And it's hard to talk about cider without really talking about apples. But what I kind of wanted to ask Steve, because I believe that Steve and the folks at Poverty Lane have also supplied West County with a lot of apples, and I believe the Kingston Black, because as Steve noted earlier, it's a fussy tree and hard to grow. And I'm just wondering, I think it'll be exciting to taste this next to that and do a comparison. And again, because it's vintage and cellared. I also would like to ask Steve if he's back on the line. I think it's exciting that today we have so many Kingston Blacks. And I'd like to get his perspective on how the cider makers, the newer cider makers in the country, does he find them coming to him for the Kingston Blacks? Are people starting to grow them on their own? Are they mostly getting cyanwood from him? Because I think it'd be interesting going forward to compare this apple as it grows in different regions.
Yeah, I mean, when we have it to spare, we sell our colleagues apples. And you know, happy to sell Kingston Black. And you know, Dan has got some Kingston Black from us over the years. The Maloneys have gotten some. I mean, a number of people have gotten Kingston Black from us over the years. That happy thing is, this is not just about Kingston Black, but exactly what Dan was just describing. Apple growers are starting to really plant cider apples seriously now. Thousands and thousands, tens of thousands. Really, actually, hundreds of thousands of trees. So it has changed a fair bit. I mean, people are not. I'm always happy when somebody wants to put in a couple dozen trees, but it's pretty exciting to see a serious apple grower starting to plant, like Dan, planting the stuff in earnest. And again, the Maloneys, Terry Maloney, gosh, Pete Hingston, a friend of mine, and I went down. God, it must have been 20 years ago, and helped Terry Maloney graft a bunch of Kingston Black in their orchard up in Coleraine. Some of their Kingston Black. I'm not sure what this. What year is this? It's 90. No, it's not. It's
2009.
I asked because we were a while ago tasting some 97 Kingston Black up here, which was pretty grim, of our own. Yeah, so 2009, that was, so Terry made this stuff, and as I recall, that fruit mostly came from us. I've got a bottle of it sitting here. I'll pop it, and we can, I'll follow along with you.
All right. And is Rowan Jacobson, are you on the line as well?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Rowan, tell us about your book. I mean, I've read your oyster book, Apples of Uncommon Character. Just tell us a little bit about why you wrote that book and, your reflections and all that.
Sure. I wrote the book because about 15 years ago, I started kind of cluing into the whole apple world beyond what, all of us knew from the world of supermarkets, which was basically Red Delicious, Gold Delicious, Granny Smith, if you're lucky. And I realized that there was this huge world of apples beyond that we weren't hearing about. It was all kind of like, in The Matrix, when you suddenly unplug from the official story and look around and realize that you've been sold a bill of goods. So the more I got fascinated by this huge and really deep world of apples that was existing completely off the official radar, the more I realized that there was just like a fascinating world that, that we weren't learning about. So that was why I decided to write the book.
And then did you study the Kingston Black as well?
Oh, yeah. And I've tasted all these Kingston Blacks that you guys are talking about. And it's been fascinating because this apple has it's got great PR, but I feel like it's got to be handled correctly or it falls a little flat.
So what's your take on the Farnham Hill Kingston Black and the West County Kingston Black?
I haven't tasted the West County. I didn't get a bottle of the West County, but of the ones I've tasted, this is kind of funny. I hate to compliment Steve when he's on the air there because that's the last.
He'll be all right.
But
nobody's complimented him yet.
The Farnham Hill was the only bottle of the ciders I tasted that had like the interesting complexity that I kind of look for from Kingston Black. It had those floral notes and those weird savory notes, and I don't know why the others didn't, but. All the things that this apple is promised to have, that was the only bottle that I found them in.
So which other ones did you get samples of?
Well, I don't want to diss the competition. But
I guess we'd have to stop right there. The tasting's over, Rowan. Thank you.
Let me support Rowan in that very briskly, but none of us wants to do that. This is collegial.
but
and
seriously,
everything he said is clear. I'm very grateful for the compliment and everything, but we're interested. We're not trying to get a leg up, buddy.
No, I think and I think because Gay organized a show, we wanted to talk about the different, you know. Just showcase this as a varietal.
All I mean to say is that nobody's going to diss anything.
Yeah, we're not going to diss. But what's next? Dan Wilson brought his Slybro Kingston Black. Let's taste that next.
Definitely.
I don't know if you guys have it, but we're going to taste it. So you guys should have come to New York. You could have had it with us. So.
I have to say that I have not tasted Dan's, but the other Slybros I've tasted have been very good.
Gay, do you have a question for Rowan about his book? Because I know we have your book in the studio right now, Rowan. So,
yeah, we do. I actually just want to say I think it's really beautifully laid out. I love the photographs. And we were going through the recipes earlier, which are pretty tasty as well. What's your favorite recipe out of the selection that you included in this book? Just curious.
Hey, thanks. That's a great question. Can I pick a couple? Is that
sure.
Acceptable? All right. Well, so one thing I tried to do with the recipes, because there's so many good sort of dessert apple recipes out there, but I feel like apples have a great role to play in savory dishes, so I kind of skewed my recipes heavily towards savory. And if there's one I would single out, it would be the Brussels sprouts with apples and bacon recipe. I feel like that's like a perfect side dish with so many different things, and it's really easy to do. So that's one I would suggest. And then the other is kind of a dessert recipe that goes in a totally different direction, and it uses apples almost like a quiche. So you make an apple-lime tart, which just takes apples, skin and all. You just blitz them in a food processor with a few eggs and some lime juice and couple of other things, and then you just bake it in a shell, and you get a very sort of tart, light dessert that is kind of worlds away from the usual, like, cinnamon-heavy apple dessert that we tend to go for.
Yeah, I'm looking at the pictures of that now. It looks amazing. Definitely worth trying. The Brussels sprout recipe, I think, is interesting as well, because I really feel like cider pairs beautifully with greens, especially American ciders. Brussels sprouts, kale, any of those really bitter greens with a lot of oomph. Cider's an excellent partner.
That's actually a really good observation. Yeah, I agree that you go with those bitter, bitter, slightly tart dishes, and cider really blooms.
Yeah, the sweetness helps, too. And we're tasting Slybro. Dan, what do you want to say about your Kingston Black cider? Each one we've had has been totally different. Like what the West County was, there was a little liveliness to it, even though it was 2009.
Yeah, it was really flinty. It still had some fruity notes in there, but it was flinty. I mean, I think you could definitely taste that. You could feel the presence of the tannin.
Yeah. And then what about the Slybro? Each one's totally different.
Yeah. With this, again, is using some of Steve's fruit, which he was generous enough to donate to the cause of spreading Kingston Black ciders.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of took this in a direction of this is actually not a pure Kingston Black, but we added a small portion of a couple of other bittersweets just to kind of develop a little bit more of the soft tannic quality and let that stand up a little bit more. This is also very lightly oaked because, again, I like that kind of astringent woody quality in the cider, and I wanted that to come forward a little bit too. But the thing that I like about Kingston Black is it can be a very robust and full flavor, where a lot of ciders, especially single variety ciders, can be on the weaker side. This one, treated well, can have a very rich flavor. But I guess one of the things I'm kind of interested by in the note that Steve mentioned is there was a lot of cider fruit going in the ground. And Kingston Black is a cider apple, for those of us who are studying cider, that precedes itself with a bit of a reputation. Because, everybody who studies cider making hears that Kingston Black is one of the few apple varieties that by itself has all the qualities that can make an interesting cider. And in the United States, we're just beginning to explore, the varietal characteristics of apples when they're fermented. And we're at the very beginning stages of understanding which apple varieties may work better in certain areas than others. So the thing that we'll be interested to see, or I'll be interested to see in the next 5 and 10 years, is how something like a Kingston Black will perform when it's grown in the Pacific Northwest or in Virginia or in upstate New York. Steve does a remarkable job. I think that his farm is perfectly suited to developing the flavors in this apple, but I think we all know that in different growing climates and different conditions on different soils, it's going to behave differently, and in some cases it may be spectacular, in other cases people may want to steer away from it because it's just not the appropriate apple for that site. But again, it's early days for us, and we're kind of learning as we go, and it'll be exciting to see what happens next.
Well, it's also, Steve, we've talked a lot about developing labels, like you start toying with the American fine cider movement and real cider. I mean, you're looking for your top quality products, aren't you, that can be priced the way a wine is?
We're hoping, man.
Well, I mean, I know your prices, and from a blend to the Kingston Black is, it's priced high. I'm gonna treat it in a different manner. I'm gonna charge more for it. Like today, we're gonna do a tasting. We're gonna offering by the glass some of these different Kingston Blacks at Chimmy's number 43. So it's important for us as restaurant and bar owners to know, what are the top ciders in America, I think having, talking about a varietal is important. It's the same way you're talking about whether it's a Cabernet Sauvignon or something else. So,
well, Jimmy, listen, this is what Dan said is absolutely true. The only way that works, we're hoping, people like Dan and I and myriad other people across the country, cider makers and cider growers, are hoping that we can carry on, growers in particular, finding out the answers, the beginnings of the answers to the questions, the exciting questions that he was just describing. We can only grow these apples if we get paid for them, and so it's impossible to make cider out of something like Kingston Black. To grow the apples to make that for the same price as cider that's made out of concentrate or that's made out of reject John and Gold. So the ciders just have got to command more. And what we don't really know is whether that's a supportable market. We know that we can't do it. Dan, am I right about this?
Absolutely.
We're not trying to gouge. Our margins are very narrow at our high prices because we're growing apples, which is a very expensive thing to do. But we're growing apples. These aren't cold dessert apples. These aren't the Macintosh that they'll make it down the line. If you tried to put some of these apples in a kid's lunchbox, you're going to family court. A lot of these things are inedible. We're growing them only to make cider out of them. And so it's, the growers have got to actually be able to support their habit of growing apples
and the only way to do that is for the ciders to command a price. And I think what Dan was just talking about, you know, is really hopeful. If people start growing these varieties across the country, real regional styles are going to start developing. Real regional differences are going to start developing, and people like Dan and I are just hoping that people will honor those differences and be happy to buy the bottles. The bottles ain't going to be $2 a piece, ever.
All right. Let's raise a glass. We get a toast here to you guys. Rowan, what do you think? You're talking about apples. You're talking about food as well. But what do you think? You think there's a market out there for fine ciders?
Yeah, you know, what strikes me is that everybody's kind of, like, scrapping out there to try to convince people why their estate-grown single varietal cider is worth $15 to $20 a bottle, while if that was wine, you know, the question would be, like, why are you selling it so cheap? So there, it's weird. There's this kind of double standard about the top wines versus the top ciders, so hopefully that'll even out over the years.
That's great. All right. We're going to take another short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. This is the Cider Week preview with Gay Howard. We're talking about what's going on in New York City.
There's a lot going on for Cider Week, and we have Sasha and Sabine here to tell us a little bit more about that. There's more events than you could possibly attend.
So what are some of the top, so Sasha, what are some of the special events that our listeners should check out in New York City? So it starts on Friday night.
Yeah, absolutely. So Friday night, there's a really fantastic kind of kickoff event with Green Market, which should be a lot of fun. They're doing a night market. They'll be pouring.
We'll be there. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
We'll be there, too.
They're going to be pouring cider by the glass. They're going to have cider makers selling by the bottle. And then a number of local restaurants will be.
In Union Square, right?
Yeah, in Union Square. Exactly. And, I mean, also just to give a little pitch for folks, because there's something for everyone. I mean, there's cider dinners. There's a pig roast. You know, there's lots of Meet the Maker events. There's a fantastic event that you're doing down at the Seaport. Like, there's all kinds of fantastic stuff. So classes at Murray's, at Astor, at Green Grape. I mean, no matter the neighborhood.
Tell us three dinners and three tables, like the place it's at and all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, do you want to talk about the dinners that you're going to,
Sure.
Sabine?
Yeah. There's a great one at Back 40 that Rowan Jacobson is actually going to be at. That's on Monday night. There is one at the Queen's Kickshaw, a really awesome restaurant and cider bar in Astoria. That's on Wednesday. Tuesday, the Farm and Adderley in Brooklyn is doing another dinner with Rowan as a special guest, and a bunch of cider makers will be there as well. Northern Spy, DBGB,
yeah.
I mean, you know. The most important thing is to go to our website, ciderweeknyc.com, click on the events tab, and then you'll see a listing of all the dates, all the events happening, and stuff is selling out. So go visit the site.
So Sabine, it used to be Cider Week New York. Why is it Cider Week NYC now?
Because we used to do Cider Week in New York City and Hudson Valley simultaneously, and we decided this year that the two regions are so different and really deserve their own Cider Weeks and their own attention and focus. So there's actually, after Cider Week NYC, in November, it's November 14th to the 23rd, Hudson Valley will have its very own Cider Week. And we'll feature only cider makers from the Hudson Valley, which is a new thing this year. So it's very exciting. There's a lot of cider makers that have cropped up in the area, and they'll be featured and celebrated. So that URL is ciderweekhv.com. So check out that website, too, if you want to head upstate.
All right. Well, let's go back. We got Rowan Jacobson, and Steve Wood on the line. So, Rowan, so you'll be in New York City next week at a couple cider dinners. How would you approach hosting a cider dinner? You know, what would your requirements be or guidelines?
Well, I figure the thing about with apples and cider both is that people haven't been exposed to this whole kind of like edgy world that's out there that's really just starting to come into its own in the U.S. So the goal with those dinners is to push that envelope out a little bit. So we'll both have tastings of a bunch of different heirloom apples that people have maybe never encountered before, and also, of course, ciders that people have never encountered before. So the idea is just to keep pushing that palate out to encounter these new and exciting things.
Great. And do you guys both have the Redbird Kingston Black Cider?
What's that?
I do, yeah.
Steve, do you also have the Redbird?
Yeah, I got Redbird. Yep.
Okay, and Dan, so what do you want to say about that one? Because we're on that right now. Redbird Kingston Black. Anyone have anything to say about it? Claire Paparazzo's here, great sommelier.
Yeah, thanks for having me, first of all. I just want to say this one is a little more animalistic. You're talking about that funk and those animal notes, and this is definitely for me, you know, I like the balance, the acidity, but it has this really nice earthy animal funk, and I assume doing any kind of like food and wine pairings, food and cider pairings, you're going to go back to the earth and see what makes sense in that way, and this would be a really nice option to include in a tasting. Very focused.
I agree with that. I've gotten all kinds of the sort of this one came up. I think Eric's doing a good job. I mean, we got the sort of cantaloupe, ripe cantaloupe, and sweetness, the weird implied sweetness that we get out of regular Kingston Black, and a bit of the toffee, little sort of boiled apple or something, a little dried papaya. Some of that earthy stuff. We were surprised by the sharpness of the acidity.
Yeah.
We liked it in the end, but man, when we first, I mean, we always smell things first. We go through all the nose, we put it in our mouths. We love acid up here, as anybody who's had our cider knows. But, this is not a criticism, but if that acid could stand to be softened a little bit, I wonder whether a little more time would do it, or this is good stuff. It had lemon in the flavor with all that other stuff in the taste. It had with all the cantaloupe and everything. We liked this one quite a lot, and we'd never had it before. We were just getting used to the Redbird stuff here at Farnham Hill, and we're pretty impressed with what Eric is doing over there.
That's great, Steve. I like their stuff, too. They have another cider that has like some wild yeast in it, too. Have you had that, Gay?
I think we had a few at the tasting at your place during Cider Week.
Yeah.
So very tasty.
There's a lot of great new growers, and you're trying to talk about orchardists. But, I mean, what does it take someone to go from wanting to make cider to growing their own, apple trees? I mean, how many years does that take, Steve?
How many years does what take?
How long does it take? Say I buy some land and there's some trees, and I want to be a cider maker. How many years is it going to take me to be able to make cider for my own?
How old are you? I'm 60.
You're older than me.
It takes longer to learn how to grow an apple tree than it does to grow an apple tree, and it takes a long time to grow an apple tree. If Dan was just talking about the process of, if you get some budwood from me or Dan this year, you are 3 years away from actually seeing a tree even in your ground. And the tree is going to be the diameter of your thumb, and it's going to be about as tall as your nose. It's not going to have any apples on it. And thereafter, it depends. I mean, but it's somewhere between 3 and 8 years before you really have anything like significant crop, depending on how you plant it.
Yeah, depending on how you manage the trees, for sure.
Don't let the deer just destroy it if you have any clue what you're doing.
people have this funny idea that, you know, I mean, cider makers think, okay, some cider makers think, right, I've been making cider for a few years, now I'm going to grow an orchard. And people like Dan and me kind of laugh because we want to say, right, why don't you try some brain surgery while you're at it? Really, you'd be better off buying a sailboat and a horse because you're going to lose less money.
Well, Steve, you recall we had a conversation with a prospective cider maker not too long ago who we kind of steered them toward the idea of linking up with an experienced orchardist to grow the varieties that they want to have for their ciders. So, you know, that happens in the wine world a lot where you have really great winemakers who do not grow their own crop, but they are very active in managing the vineyards that they're collecting grapes from. And I think the same could be done with cider makers. And that would also do a great shot to help, you know, preserve orchards and to keep apple farms alive and to kind of capitalize on the, you know, decades of experience of some of these great apple growers in the region, too.
Here, here. Sabine? Absolutely right.
I just wanted to say I had the pleasure of visiting Eric Schatz from Redbird's Orchard last Tuesday up in the Finger Lakes, and he's not only crazy enough to plant trees, but grow them biodynamically, which is very unusual here in the Northeast.
Isn't he also doing a little bit of wild foraging as well and going out and finding lost apples? And-
yeah, a little bit. But mostly really just trying to plant a lot of cider apple varieties.
Well, that's my find of the year, Redbird. I love them. Next one, Eve Cider. Who wants to comment on that? Because this is nice. I mean, Claire, what do you think of this one?
I think it is showing more of those kind of fruity characters, and the acidity is very balanced. It's enjoyable all around on its own, but probably I was thinking of some kind of really delicious triple cream, like cow's milk cheese. That would be really amazing with this right now.
Who was that?
I think this one shows the fruit the best.
This is Claire Paparazzo. She was a sommelier at Blue Hill.
You're good, girl.
Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah, this stuff is great. I mean, we had ripe tangerine, raspberry. We got fruit for miles out of this thing.
Yeah, this is
with nice acid balance. Mm-hmm. A little bit of almost sort of fruit leather or something, you know, mm-hmm. like not really artificial. Just you've been messing with the fruit a little bit, berries, pineapple. We thought this one was cool. And again, not very. I mean, gee, we keep thinking we know what Kingston Black does. This is different. We recognized it, but just barely. You know, it's mm-hmm. lovely.
Steve, do you know Ezra and Eve Cidery?
What's that?
Do you know them, Eve Cidery?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, they're goodness. yes, Autumn came to see me. God, it must almost be 20 years ago. I talked to her on the phone today. We've been pals for years. We helped them. I don't want to exaggerate this, but when they were looking for information and material on cider apples, we did everything we could for them. They're cool. They do a very good job up there. And they're in their Finger Lakes, which is, you know, grape land, right? But they're growing full fruit, making great cider. They make brilliant method Champenoise cider, and they make, I think, one of the best still dry ciders in the country, Albee Hill. I don't like method Champenoise cider, but for the most part, I love their cider. It's one of those weird things. Dan and I talk about this all the time, how you know, there's a certain sort of thing you don't like very much, except somebody makes one that you just think is just wonderful. They are on that list. I know them. They're good news.
You're good. You're good, man. I've got you on the phone. I can't believe I've got Steve Wood. We got Rowan Jacobson, and we're talking about even food and cider pairings. Are there any more ciders to taste? Do we have the?
Yeah,
I think we actually have three more.
Two more at least.
Yeah. Let's do them. So what's next?
We have Distillery Lane, which is also a single varietal Kingston Black. And then we have an Eden Sparkling Cider, which is 50%.
Let's pop them both, and let's go, because
right,
our show's running down.
Let's go.
And Sabine, you're writing down notes over there. Are you just getting new ideas, or do you want to ask a question? Why don't you get the microphone?
I was just going to say it's interesting to taste still ciders, so I'm always curious to hear how people taste those differently than they do those with bubbles.
I have the question for Steve. When I first met you, you said you were only making still ciders, and then you got turned on to draft, so then you started making you know, whatever, sparkling? Or?
Yeah, I guess, you know, buddy, we've been making fizzy cider for years. We just, what it really boils down to is we would rather just make still ciders. But with what Sabine just said, I mean, I'd suggest you go to the Edens next, because this is a sort of, if you want to taste a real, something close to Mette Champenoise or French style cider with natural bubbles, that's the one you've got left for that on your list. But yeah, we don't know. We'd like to make still dry cider because we think that's the best expression of the fruit. But that is totally opinionated.
Well, Steve, let me tell you what I want to give a big plug to Eden, because you know everyone knows Eleanor, but I know in June she rolled this out in New York City, and I think this is a breakthrough product for cider because it's very well made. We're selling it as a half bottle on the sparkling wine list. We sold a lot of it this summer, and to me this is a great new direction for cider. I serve this to Carlo Petrini of Slow Food. You know, this has been the breakthrough cider for me, for a lot of people. So good. Hey, it's, you know, she told me it's champagne yeast, you know, dry, sparkling. Let's everyone give a quick opinion of this. Let's talk about styles in cider, because we want cider to be more popular. We want fine ciders to be more popular. You know, I don't care about Magnus and I don't care about some canned ciders, but I care about fine ciders. So, Gay and Kate, let's go around the room. Everyone say, what do you like about this, or do you think this is a good direction for fine cider to go in?
Well, can I weigh in on that?
Sure, absolutely. Well, oh, you're in the room too. That's right.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because all these ciders, I started out with them chilled and tasted them all, and the sparkling definitely works well when it's chilled, but as they warm up, the sparkling starts to seem like a mistake and the stills come to the fore. But in terms of the sparkling ciders, yeah, Eden, I feel like that really is the standard setter right now for sparkling cider. It has the richness of like a Normandy cider, but it tastes like a Normandy cider made by cider makers who actually bathe now and then.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I can only speak to what I'm tasting here, but I mean, I get vanilla notes. I get some tropical fruit. The effervescence of it is beautiful. It's all very well balanced, and it has, for me, what all of the Kingston Black ciders have had, which is a nice long finish that you can really chew on. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we were getting at initially with that musky, sexy, sweaty. It's like you just feel it, and it's primal. And the Kingston Black is, I feel like it's really bringing that to all of these ciders. This one's a little more delicate, but it's really, really beautiful.
Yeah. And Claire? Go, Sasha.
Well, I was just going to say, I think the thing that's so notable about this one is it's just mm-hmm. remarkably balanced, right? Mm-hmm. And it's also got this really nice nuttiness that I didn't observe necessarily in the others that's, I think, really lovely. And also that Eleanor can make all these incredible ice ciders and then, you know, knock it out of the park with this, like, just lovely sparkling cider.
If you want to try all Eleanor's ciders and some Farnham Hill ciders, next Wednesday there's a cider maker dinner at Jimmy's Number 43. Yeah. With Eleanor. I don't know if Steve's going to be there or Lulu. You love those people, don't you, Steve?
No, we love working with those guys. They're great, but we love working with Dan. So Eleanor and Albert, you're saying Eleanor, and I adore Eleanor, but Albert, her husband, has a great deal to do with actually putting these things together. You know, they've got the starter and the finisher. When we do the dinner, they've got the beautiful aperitif. They've got the beautiful thing to finish it. And now they've got a good cider to go in the middle with us. You know, we're going to start we might have to kill them soon. But we think this is really good cider. And it is made. I mean, there's another hour in how this stuff is made. But it's very complicated how they make this stuff.
Yeah, because they actually use some of the ice cider, right?
Ice cider. It's after they finished drawing down the brick of ice for their very unctuous syrup from which they make the ice cider. There's still some goody left in that brick of ice, and they take the next little bit from the cryofraction in the ice, and they ferment that, and then they add some of the Kingston Black and some other bittersweets to that, and they ferment that, they put it in oak, and then they finish the fermentation in the bottle, and Albert disgorges every bloody bottle, just like method champenoise, meaning dipping its neck into a bath of ice and pulling the plug of yeast out. I mean, this stuff should be $50 a bottle.
It is in some restaurants. Claire, what do you think? You got a sommelier here.
I feel like
about champagne.
I want a piece of prosciutto with this. I don't know. It's like when I'm tasting and smelling all these flavors, I imagine food. And I feel like the saltiness of the prosciutto would be so lovely with this delicate bubble in your mouth and a little touch of sweetness, but the finish is just really long and balanced. So
great.
Really delicious.
And we have to jump the show, but there's one last cider, Distillery Lane in Maryland. Gay, tell us a little bit about them, because they really tried hard to come to New York City for Cider Week.
They wanted to be here with us, but they couldn't. But this is their bourbon barrel-aged Kingston Black, so it's going to finish us with a bourbon barrel.
So tell us about them. So like they're not distributed yet in New York. They will be at some point.
They're hoping to get here, and obviously we'll let you know so that they can do a tasting event with you. They are Maryland-based, and this is actually the first time I've tasted any of their ciders. I've been aware of them for a while, but this is our first tasting. So
it's very different.
Can I just say something about, you know, I'm looking at these ciders, and as Steve points out, this is not an easy-to-grow apple. It is a little bit rare, but as a class or a group of ciders, I would also say these are not entry-level ciders. They're certainly within the realm of what is possible in the flavor range of cider in some very exciting ways. So I would encourage people who are listening to this show to seek these ciders out, because these are the ciders that we want the buyers to really aspire to, because they really do reflect the quality of the fruit that goes in them. And if you guys buy more of this stuff, we will make more of this stuff.
We'll make more. Right.
So please, explore.
All right. Hey, Steve, any parting words from you?
Parting words?
Yeah.
Yes. Drink good cider and don't give bad cider a break.
Okay. And Rowan.
Be demanding. There's enough cider out there that people can really be demanding. The exciting thing for those of us who are trying to make good cider that reflects the fruit and the ground on which it's grown is that there is enough out there now that people can choose. And people like Dan and I and the Legers and the Autumn and Ezra at Eve's, we're all hoping that people will be demanding, you know, and actually go seek good cider. Just what Dan said, go for the good stuff. It's there.
Steve, you're inspiring. On that note, there's a great book that we've been passing around today. Pete Brown's, we still have it here?
Yep, it's right over there.
What's the name of that book?
World's Best Cider.
World's Best Cider. Pete Brown. Who's the other guy, Dan?
Bill Bradshaw.
Yep. So
also go to Jimmy's. That's the other thing. Go to Jimmy's.
Go to Jimmy's next week and experience Cider Week. But we're passing that book around. Everyone here is signing it. And also, Rowan, parting words?
Room temperature. Cider is more like red wine than white wine.
Oh, you sing, sir.
Oh. Radical.
Indeed.
Well, I want to say that thank you for everyone for coming on the show. Cider Week New York is coming up on Friday.
October 22nd.
And it's ciderweeknyc.com. Some great events, including our kickoff event, Cider Feast at the Seaport on Saturday. We have a wide world of cider. We'll have ciders from Ireland and Astoria, Spain, as well as America. And we've got some guys coming in. Like, there's not everyone's officially, you know, distributing the city. Distillery Lane's trying to come up from Maryland. But Reverend Nats from the Pacific Northwest, he's sending over some samples for us. We're going to be tasting them. A lot of cool people want to be part of the Cider Week in New York City. And you guys, Sabine and Sasha, have done a great job, and we're really proud to be part of it. And Steve, again, Steve Wood and Rome Jacobs, thank you for joining us on the air, calling in. You're missing out on all the fun in studio, but it was great having you guys. So we had some great guests. And, of course, I'll give a thanks to Dan Wilson of Slybro Ciders, Gay Howard, United States of Cider, Kay Michaels, the Eagley Cheesemonger. Sabine,
also of United States of Cider, Jimmy. That's really why I'm here.
And your Twitter is @HelloCider.
Yes.
Which is cool. Mm. And Sabine and Sasha from Cider Week. And Cleo Paparazzo, our sommelier, and great, great pairing suggestions.
Excellent.
And
thank
you know, we could
you.
Do thank about you. Three more hours of this show, and I would love to do it. But thanks for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers on this show, Gay Howard and everyone else, Maggie Seiden, Justin Kennedy, and our engineer, Jack Inslee. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
All right.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.